I'm a software developer, how do I try to figure that out? There are 4,000 patents on e-commerce. On online shopping, there are 11,000 patents. So if I'm a software developer, what methodology do I find to ensure that I'm not violating a software patent? I have no method. Even a company like IBM has given up.
These are business methods,
online shopping, one-click shopping, etc., etc. So another question, you know, how much, if I am a software developer and I want to ensure that I am on the safe side of the law and I want to ensure that I'm not violating XYZ's patent. I don't want to violate, I'm not a criminal, I'm not interested in violating anybody's patent. So I tell a lawyer that, okay, you know, maybe this particular patent I might be violating if I implement online e-commerce. If I ask him to do a patent examination and give me a legal opinion, what is the cost of that? Give me some ideas, some rough numbers. This is, of course, most of the numbers we have are derived from the US. So we'll use that as for the time being. But I don't know the Indian, if there is a lawyer, maybe, you know, one of you could give me some numbers. In the US, it cost me $5,000 to get a legal opinion. If I tell a lawyer, please look at this individual patent, I'll have to pay him $5,000. Now there are 4,000 patents on e-commerce. So 4,000 multiplied by 5,000, that is what I'll have to pay. Here's the best part. You give me the legal opinion, that is not good enough. You may be wrong. So I cannot use that as a defense in the court of law again. So these are the kind of practical issues that we face when it comes to software development. The other problem is, of course, the whole issue of what Nagarjuna mentioned in the morning, that software is an extremely abstract thing. So how do you kind of define a software patent? How do you create the borders around software patent so that people who don't want to violate the patent are in the clear? That's clearly a huge issue. How many here know the difference between copyrights and patents? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Some hands very reluctantly going up. So let me elaborate on that a little bit because I think that is fundamental. One of the things that Red Hat as a company has argued for is that copyrights are good enough to protect software. We don't want software patents. The issue is, the advantage with a, let's say, you know, you're a software developer and you write a piece of software. I have developed something similar. I cannot sue you for creating a similar piece of software because you have arrived at it independently. You have not looked at my code, you have not stolen my code. Unfortunately, with software patents, the same argument does not hold true. If you have arrived at the software independently, but I am the one who holds the patent, I have the right to exclude you. A patent is basically a right to exclude somebody. So since I own the patent, I can sue you, I can say that you have violated my patent, in spite of the fact that you have come to that particular software and you have implemented that idea without copying my idea. So that is one, clearly for the open source community, if we have a regime of software patents, then one of the first thing that we'll have to do is hire a battery of lawyers, ask them to look at the kind of software code we are writing, examine whether we are violating the code. So imagine the kind of overrides and the challenges that we have in terms of implementing software. Basically, the fundamental problem with software patents is that it prevents independent invention.
Why is it open source community?
Yeah, good point. I take that back. I think it's any software developer. Basically, you have to keep looking over your shoulders again and again and, you know, have a battery of legal opinion, and then even with the legal opinion, you're not in the clear. Because let me give another example. If you look at the RIM, the BlackBerry case, BlackBerry, like I think Prabir mentioned the case, BlackBerry settled the case for $612 million. Now, what happened in that particular case is that BlackBerry had filed for patents around their technology. In spite of the fact that they had patents around their technology, one of the patent troll companies came up, filed cases against BlackBerry, and they got an injunction to stop BlackBerry from running its service, which would have led to literally a closure of the company. So they knew that those cases, those patents are very weak ones, but because of the threat of closure of the company, they settled the case for $612 million. Now the tragedy is that those cases, a few months later, those patents were thrown out by the court of law in the US. So these are the kind of issues that, you know, even despite the fact that they had technology, they had patents around that technology, they still could not defend themselves. So these are the kind of, it's as good a case of perfect storm as you can find in the legal issue.
Can BlackBerry sue the patent owner?
If they could have, they probably might have. I don't know that.
There's no guarantee of that.
There's no guarantee of?
The patent office gives no guarantee as to the patent.
Okay.
Between parties.
There was no force on BlackBerry to settle. They could always shut down their servers and proceed to the legal angle. Right.
Which would have killed the company effectively.
Yes, it's operation successful, patient dead kind of thing. So, the other question that we need to look at from a policy perspective is, do patents actually encourage invention? Because the argument that is trotted out again and again by the pro-software patents lobbies, we are doing invention, we are doing innovation, therefore we need this kind of a protection. Again, what is the evidence? You know, there's a lot of rhetoric going around, but if you go back to Bessin and Murer, and these are the best people who have done real solid empirical work on this issue. If you go to their website, research on innovation, you will find a whole bunch of information on this entire issue. What they have found is that with the software patent regime, R&D has actually gone down, but the propensity to file patents has actually gone up.
Which is like drug. Exactly like what's happening in
the pharma industry.
Pharma industry.
Mm. So I think you can draw your own conclusions from that particular point. But I think Nagarjuna kind of made a similar point in the morning, which is that if you look at the history of the IT industry, some of the greatest inventions and the innovations in the IT industry have happened way before software patents were part of the mainstream. You know, I think it's around 1980 that software patents actually came into mainstream kind of a usage. If you look at the pre-1980s era, you had spreadsheets, you had compilers, you had, you know, a whole bunch of technologies which were created. So you had a huge era of innovation which was without software patents. I think that is fairly good evidence that you don't need software patents to promote innovation. So the final this is that, you know, how does it affect developers? If we have to keep constantly taking legal opinion, I mean, no, it is a axiom that, you know, hackers don't like to do documentation, hackers don't like to talk to lawyers. I think if we have an era of software development, I think I see some people smiling about that. But if we have an era where, you know, software patents are the de facto thing, the amount of effort that it takes to get understanding and clarity that I am not violating somebody else's software patent, that itself will be a phenomenal break on invention. So I think that's kind of quickly summarizing what's happening with the legal scene with software patents globally. What is the evidence? What is the data? And if there are any questions, please let me know. Thanks. He's getting the mic.
Just to take deliberately a devil's advocate position. So yeah. What if there is free riding by the big guys on, say, you know, you're a small business operator in India.
Right.
Like you've developed software.
Right.
Right. It's not patentable.
Right.
Okay. But in Malaysia, in Sri Lanka, in South Africa, right. I use the same thing. I'm too small to patent it worldwide.
Right.
Right. It's useful in India, but in other contexts, a big guy takes it and uses it and, you know, gets a patent there. Wherever it is. Maybe, you know, I'm just saying.
You mean I'm a small guy, the big guy copies it from
me
illegally?
Yeah.
Or, okay.
Like whatever.
Okay.
There's no legality.
He just imitates me.
Imitates it and uses it in a different jurisdiction, different country.
Right.
So in that context, I would like you to just think, you know, so why not in India, the small guy also can patent? Or how do you have a reaction to this?
How does it help the big guy in the other market?
Well, he gets business.
No, he gets a patent, which you can always disprove saying it's prior art.
Right.
Somebody else has already made it. He does not invent all the things. So he loses his patent even in that context.
So he still has muscle power.
If you don't have the money to file for a patent, you don't have the money to file for an opposition.
Well, prior art does not require that.
So
I mean, somebody else, a third party can.
Kind of opposition.
Okay, now can we just have one person speak at a time? So, did you want to say something? Kingsley.
No,
so what you're saying is prior art will basically
invalidate it if you want to enter that market. If you're a small guy that's operating in India, don't you think it's easier for you to operate without patents than with patents? If you're such a small guy that can't afford to file for patents, there's no way you're going to afford to file for patents if you have patents law in India.
See, theoretically you're right. The point is, the whole one of the big essential issues is that you can't figure out what is prior art with, you know, millions of codes being written, right?
Yeah.
So it may be after the fact that you realize after a few years that it is prior art, and no seemingly efficient patent office in Malaysia or Bangladesh will figure out that it is prior art, practically speaking.
Yeah.
Right? So it's possible, very possible that you could go ahead and patent this, and prior art will not be discovered, and the big guys can make money out of something which was made already somewhere else.
I think there again the evidence is, I don't recall it correctly, but they don't really make much money. Software patents are not really a huge money spinner. It's a great nuisance value. That's the greatest value of a software patent is the nuisance value.
To answer your question, I think, hi, my name is Vishwanath, I'm a software developer. To answer your question, I think you should listen to one of the speeches by Richard Stallman on software patents, where he debunks the myth that patents protect a small innovator who's operating out of a basement or something like that. The reason why he says it doesn't protect them is that any non-trivial program that you write, which you think is a patentable thing, has a combination of many ideas. And most of the time, big companies have patents on at least some of the ideas that you implemented in your program. So even if you happen to get a patent on your idea, if there was a patent system, the PKs would come back and say, hey, we have these 100 patents which are violating, so you have to cross-license with us, otherwise you have to go out of business, we'll sue the hell out of you. So you have to turn around and basically what do you call cross-license with the big company. The big company walks away and they can use all your ideas because you cross license with them, so you are actually the loser in this whole deal. You are not winning because you got one patent, you are losing because the big companies have got many patents, which you would have likely trampled, because I'm assuming you're writing a non-trivial program which has many ideas, which would have patent implications for you also. So I think he mentions that, Mr. Stallman mentions that the Economist magazine has termed the software patents are a time-consuming lottery. So you're basically playing with a lottery system. It's not really an effective system to protect us, quote-unquote, small inventors.
These are different strategies. Well, I understand your strategy, but I also understand what I was saying is not completely, you know, exhausted by what you're saying.
But if the company is big enough, won't you claim damages?
One at a time, please. Let me go to the audience before.
They're making sure that Sunil is fast.
It's a good thing.
I was only thinking that as a small company, in any case, how do I benefit by patenting here to prevent this big company from doing exactly what you said, even if I have a patent? So my patent here is not going to protect me from the big company using it in Malaysia, Bangladesh, or whatever, in the theoretical hypothetical scenario sketched out. So I don't get protection in those markets. The question is, if I have a patent, I only get protection here. And as the question is, this protection comes at a very heavy cost. But I, in this market, will be sued now by the big company. So all the patent violations are done. And one should really look at a very interesting argument which was given by the Sun, not anecdote, given by the Sun Microsystems lawyer, when IBM came to sue them. This was in 1996. And they came with 8 patent claims they made on Sun and said, you're violating 8 of our patents. Sun guy said, hey, these are all trivial. What is the chap talking about? So 6, 7 are totally trivial. It doesn't make a difference. And 8, you could take report, you lose it. So those IBM lawyers yawned and told them, we have got 10,000 patents. Do you want us to go through this, find out how many of it you have violated, and what do you pay? Sun debated, paid $4 million.
So you know, this is the really the issue.
Yeah, these are very interesting points you raised.
I think I've set the stage for a very nice discussion. I don't know. Here's the answer, you know. I don't know if this is an answer, but Praveer keeps ribbing me for this, you know. But we have a 5,000 year long history, and in that 5,000 years, I've never come across a term called intellectual property. Suddenly, the Western has come up with this whole notion, and you know, the IITs and the IIMs and everybody is like saying intellectual property. I mean, we don't divide. It's a very reductionist kind of a very Western kind of a idea that, you know, you reduce intellect into property. So Praveer and I keep arguing about it, but this is, at least let me put my
hand. This is the last 20
years. Okay. So we have never reduced intellect into property. So why should we now, you know, start off? In fact, one of the Prime Minister's office, Prithviraj Chauhan had kind of spoken at one of our events. And he said that open source has reversed this whole notion that, you know, knowledge is something to be commoditized and propertized. And that's a historical role that the open source community has done in terms of reversing this whole idea of that knowledge can be propertized, which I think is a very valid point.
Vengi, I'm Joseph. I come from software. Either I got lost in between or you didn't answer the question which you posed about the difference between copyright and
yeah.
Nagarjuna, when he initially spoke, was saying copyleft is also
a form of copyright. Yeah.
And we are using it. The author is actually claiming a document.
Right.
Author innovation.
Right.
But whereas if I say copyright gives author that freedom.
Yeah.
Whereas patents actually creates another world order.
Correct.
Which actually deprives us from exercising such freedom.
Yeah.
Which I think answers his question also on he said this might be one strategy, but there is another strategy. Hmm. Unfortunately, if we go for the patent regime,
right,
we don't have such an option.
Right.
Because they are trying to create another world order, forcing it on us.
Right, I mean, if you look at the number of who's actually filing patents in India, it's all actually the multinational companies. It's not the Indian companies. But I want to answer.
Patent also can do that.
Yes, you can.
Actually, I think I want to answer Joseph. The fundamental thing about a patent which we need to understand is a patent is a straight granted monopoly. Now, when we look at.
So is copyright.
Pardon?
So is copyright.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good point.
No, but under copyright, you don't need the GPL actually. Under Indian Copyright Act, a person has the freedom to modify it or adapt for interoperability. That's an inherent right. Without the GPL, you still have that right. Okay.
So let me modify that, you know, since Praveer pointed out that even a copyright is a monopoly. A patent is a monopoly on the idea itself. A copyright protects the expression of an idea. Yeah, so you can express the same idea in a different way. Under the copyright law, you're perfectly okay. But if you express the same idea that I own under the patent law, then under the patent law, you're a violator. Or, you know, let me put it this way. If I have a particular patent, that means that everybody in this room and everybody outside this room is completely excluded from using that idea. But if I have a copyright on a particular idea and you arrive at it and you do a similar implementation independently, you are safe. I think that's the simplest explanation I can find.
Just to add to his point, he was talking about patent laws in different countries. So in US alone itself, there was a case where LZW compression algorithm was patented twice.
Twice?
Yeah. So in that case, so whom has to be protected? I mean, it doesn't matter like which country.
Right.
So within our own country itself, So there could be a small developer and another one, a major one.
Of course, we would say both should be invalidated.
Yeah, so in that case, whether patent office mistake or...
In fact, somebody in Australia, somebody patented the wheel. So you can describe it in such a way that you know nobody can even figure out it's a damn wheel. In the US, somebody filed a patent on method for swinging on a swing. Peanut butter sandwich. Right.
I have a smart question.
Yeah.
Now, what if I have a patent, but I forego my legal rights 24/7? Can I allow everyone to adopt that? Because then I'm just using it so that no one else can patent it and force me to pay royalty or not use it.
Yeah. So that's what Red Hat and a whole bunch of there's the Open Invention Network, which I think Novell, Red Hat, a whole bunch of companies are part of that. And that's exactly the strategy.
You don't even need to, right? You just put it all in the open and it's private.
Yeah, that's another strategy.
In fact, then you can't stop this private approach. You cannot stop the next step being taken and that being appropriately used. So public domain has a problem.
Yeah, Nagarjuna.
No, anyway, the point is that there are so many ways in which alternative strategies can be built.
Right.
Either you yourself come out with a wonderful patenting kind of a scheme, where you have a large number of them and then you get into that kind of a regime and things like that.
Right.
But all these things are completely useless. I mean, coming to this thing, I mean, which is also a bit complicated, is that if you have an idea, just block it.
Yeah.
That's the most.
That is.
Block it. Block it on the
internet.
Block it. Just publish it on the wiki, publish it on your websites. As soon as you do it, nobody can have a patent anywhere. So the point is that
there is a problem with that.
No, those problems are
not appropriate. So you have to put it in common. You put it in public domain.
No, I'm not saying public domain. See, suppose you can also put it in copyleft, right? You can also put it in GFDL, or you can put it in Creative Commons license, or you can put it in so many other ways. What I'm saying is, if you have an idea, publish it.
But before you publish, as Vengi said, do we have to send 4,000
others? Let's publish. I just wanted to quick one last point. So, no questions after that. So let's say I have a particular patent and I send you a cease and desist letter. Just imagine, how much does it cost me to send you a letter saying cease and desist from using my software patent? Cost of a postcard. The question is, it's a rhetorical question, but the question is, if I have a software patent and I want to stop you from using it, how much does it cost me? So it's basically the cost of a postcard. But now you got the letter saying that stop using my software patent. You want to go to talk to a lawyer. How much will it cost you to get a legal opinion? $40,000. If I take you to court, how much will it cost you? $2 million. Thank you.